Well, good morning or good afternoon, folks. Whenever you're hearing the news from Knife River, we're on twice a month. We're on the second Friday of every month at 9 o'clock, so good morning to you folks. And then we repeat it the following Sunday at 1 p.m., so good afternoon to you folks. The news will be the same, two for both, of course. It's all one recording session. Well, today is we're going to be talking about what's new, the news from Knife River in this past April, and I'll get going with that in just a minute, but I couldn't help but think when I drove from Knife River here to the studios here, that had this been maybe 40, 50 years ago, we would have been cleaning up after our smelter visitors. I don't know how many of you can recall, because we really haven't had a smelting season in about, 20, 30 years. Most of them have gone away, the natural die-offs. Nature has a way of balancing itself. But I think it's best that probably the smelt run is over and probably looks like forever. They're still in the lake. And the trout still are feeding on them, but the smelt run is not like we, many of us, recall from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and even into the 80s. So, probably just as well it's gone. Anyway, so that's a comment on April from memories from years ago. But let's get more current here, and we'll go into the news from Knife River here with April news. And this comes from our newsletter, which I write and publish. My name is Paul Von Gertz. I am the president of the Knife River Heritage and Cultural Center. And if you haven't seen what we've accomplished, please drive down Marina Road towards the marinas, you might guess, and you will see what we're doing with the depot. As you're heading south towards the marina, the depot is, of course, on your left, right next to the railroad track. We've done a lot of work. We're very proud of what we've done. It's not open, but you can peek through the window if you like, and you can see that we're in a process of returning that depot to a depot of the 1900s. Pretty proud of what our volunteers have done, and also very thankful for the donations that we've received as from individuals as well as from grants that have allowed us to bring the depot to where you see it today. Exterior pretty much done. There's a second building, a freight building, where freight was stored between when it was being transferred from one rail line to another. And that needs to be restored yet, as does the Crusader. That's a 35-foot fish tug that you'll see on our site that has long ties to Knife River going back to 1939, and we'll be restoring that in the next few years. All right. Well, first of all, our lead story for April is Knife River can boast of hosting Lake Superior's first American shipwreck. Now, that is an interesting honor, isn't it? And many of us in Knife River, we sometimes refer to ourselves as herring chokers, and that's a term, I guess, that we got somewhere in the 40s, 50s, 60s from a herring that were caught out of Knife River. It wasn't because we were eating a lot of herring and choking on them, but rather when the herring were caught in the nets, they had to be pulled through by their gills and in the process choking the herring. So that was when somebody, probably a Swede, came up with calling, referring to people from Knife River as herring chokers. So, not the best term, but anyway, this is something we herring chokers perhaps would rather not have this distinction, but we can claim it if we want to. And here's how Knife River can boast of hosting Lake Superior's first American shipwreck. In April of 1834, the American Fur Company schooner, Madeline, was making a run for the Apostle Islands to Fond du Lac and far west Duluth. Its owner was the American Fur Company, which was formed in 1808. And was a major player in the fur trade in the Great Lakes region. The Madeline was one of several American Fur Company ships plying Lake Superior since 1834, when the American Fur Company decided to branch out and diversify itself into the commercial fishing business. It created fishing operations in Grand Portage, Isle Royale, Knife River, and Fond du Lac. In 1847, it would even dabble in some of the copper mining in the Knife River area. And that's a story we'll get into some other date. On the copper mining in Knife River. Well, we don't know what cargo Captain Angus might have had in the hold of the Madeline or what he planned for backhaul, but we do know the American Fur Company schooners were built for strength and not speed. Schooners around the time of the Madeline were about 110-ton size and believed to be about 45 feet in length and a generous beam. A generous beam was required to carry a lot of cargo. And we have a painting of the schooner John Jacob Astor, a near sister ship of the Madeline that was painted by North Shore artist Howard Sievertson and a former Knife River resident. And we had this picture of what the Madeline may have looked like in our newsletter. And we used that picture as a watercolor with permission of the Severson Galleries and Howard Severson. Well, as Captain Angus made his run from Fond du Lac, pack ice driven by northeast winds began to form near Knife River. As the ice threatened to capture the Madeline in its icy grip, Captain Angus headed his ship towards the mouth of the Knife River, hoping the rush of spring runoff would help create a path that would lead, in part, to Fond du Lac. Unfortunately, he was stopped just short of the mouth of the Madeline and was soon locked in ice. Well, Captain Angus knew the pressure of wind-driven ice would eventually crush his ship's hull. Well, he directed his crew to get as much of the cargo and rigging to shore before the Madeline broke apart, which it soon did. I think we all know the power that ice can have on crushing objects, particularly when it's wind-driven. So, it broke apart. Well, the crew was then forced to walk through snow all the way to Fond du Lac, probably 40 miles or so. Man, that's awful. You lose your boat, and then you have to walk 40 miles through snow. And anyway, the roads are probably just paths that the native folks used. Well, Captain Angus, okay, so soon the crushed schooner later washed ashore on Minnesota Point, which we now know as Park Point in Duluth. So people then thought that the demise of the Madeline happened there. But the written report of the shipwreck by Captain Angus to American Fur Company officials still exists in storage in New York and supports the story I just read to you here. So given that Captain wrote the report on what took place, we have to believe that indeed Knife River did host Lake Superior's first American shipwreck. I say American because there were Canadian shipwrecks too, but the Madeline was the first American one. Well, over the years, there have been reports from fishermen and others that peer through the clear waters of Lake Superior that they could see the remains of the Madeline between the island and the lake dock, which we also call the coal dock. But such reports have always been met with skepticism. I mean, if you could, I've been over this area many times on my boat on clear, after we've had like west winds, the water's very clear. You can see down quite a few feet, maybe 20 feet. But if you could see remains of a wreck, you aren't probably looking at the remains. You're looking at something else, because the remains of the wreck would have been washed ashore on the Knife River Agate Beach over the years with the strong northeast winds. So if the Madeline did sink, there does not appear to be any remains that are visible. So that's an interesting story of Knife River's history, we think. Our next story is Knife River collects some baggage. You have to pardon the pun here, but unless people complain, I'm still going to put puns in my headlines. The Knife River search for artifacts, the Heritage Center's search for artifacts to embellish its site began with our nonprofit status nearly 3 years ago this July. Well, we are thrilled to announce that one of our most sought-after items, a baggage or mail or express wagon, has been found by the center's historian, Todd Lindell, many of whom you know, and purchased at a bargain price. Todd is quite a negotiator. These wagons were original equipment at every railroad agency station in the country, including the Knife River area, Knife River Depot. Now, the word express is anything that needs to move quickly by railroad and is handled by passenger trains rather than freight trains. I didn't know that. This could include a wide variety of items from crates and parcels to even live animals. Outgoing express or baggage and U.S. mail would be loaded onto small, hand-pulled wagons before passenger trains arrived. The decks of these wagons were at the same height as the passenger train baggage car floor, making loading and unloading easy. There are a lot of items to be loaded. Additional wagons could be coupled together. The wagon the Heritage Center received had been owned by the St. Paul Union Company, also known as SPUD, the abbreviations, which was made up and owned by eight different railroads that ran passenger trains to St. Paul. It's thought our wagon dates to the late 1880s, and so fits right in with our goal of returning the appearance and function of the depot to one from the early 1900s. It's interesting that the newspapers in 1899 and 1900 called our depot the Knife River Union Depot because it served more than one railroad, with each splitting the cost of maintaining and operating it. They were the Duluth and Iron Range Railroad and the Alger Smith Lumber Company's Duluth and Northern Minnesota Railroad. So perhaps it is appropriate a former Union Depot express wagon ended up here. Now, we offered in this issue of our newsletter the opportunity for somebody or organization to sponsor or pay for this particular wagon. And so we said that if he would like to sponsor this wagon and be recognized for sponsoring it for $650, that a brass plaque would be placed on the wagon to honor the sponsorship and or to mention to acknowledge the sponsorship. And once somebody wanted to honor somebody, you could do that as well. It'd just be a small brass plaque. Well, anyway, within, 24 hours of the newsletter going out, it's emailed, we had three folks that indeed wanted to sponsor this express wagon. And so we took the first one, and hopefully the other two will be interested in sponsoring something else. I thought I'd just mention that to show the support that our Knife River Heritage Center has with the community and how people want to see it succeed and be the depot return to what one would have seen in 1900. Many thanks to Todd Lindahl for locating this wagon and exercising his skills in price negotiation. And thanks, too, for Todd for providing a lot of historical information for the story, which I just read to you. Now, back in February, we mentioned that one of the icons from Duluth, the Leif Erikson Viking boat that sailed over from Norway in 1927 to Duluth, and was the namesake for Leif Erikson Park, that the nonprofit organization that now has the control over the boat and as its steward was looking for a place to relocate it. We're very pleased and proud to announce that Knife River was looked at one of two places, was recognized as one of two finalists for a site, permanent site, for the Leif Erikson. People have asked, how's that going? I'm glad they're interested in that. And I can report now that, no, we haven't been selected as a site, but we have not said no either. It's still on the table. We still have conversation with the Leif Erikson folks. And it's totally up to them as to where they decide. The other location is in Duluth and Canal Park. And we've told them why Knife River would be a good location. And it's up to them to decide whether or not they want to act on that. We've got our final plans now. We have an engineering company that assisted us in designing our site and also our shelters for the Heritage Center. And on that site plan, we do include space for the Leif Erikson, and it's in a prime location for people passing by Marina Road. Now, if we are not selected as a site for the boat, we will use that space to create a shelter to shelter up to three smaller 20-foot gas boats that are indigenous to Knife River. And actually all three of them have been restored and are privately owned. But at some point, we hope all three of those boats could be in this shelter if indeed the Leif Erikson doesn't come to Knife River. Okay, moving right along here. I'm trying to stay within 20 minutes here. Since last fall, this newsletter has let me back it up to the headline here. Knife River Heritage Center expands its influence. And by that, I mean we're now on the air with reading the newsletter. For those of you who may not be on the mailing list for the newsletter, you certainly can be by just asking to be. Email KRHCC, email info@krhcc.org and request to be in the newsletter mailing list. But if you're not, you can hear it aired as you are today. Okay, also too now, is in terms of expanding our influence, we do have a website. It made its debut on April 12th. The Heritage Center provided the script, suggested navigation and all the images to Breakwell Digital of Two Harbors, which then created and programmed the site. We're very pleased with our relationship with Breakwell Digital, and we like to do business locally, and they did a very quality job. And we designed the site so we can maintain it and update it. The site contains links to current and past newsletters, so folks who may not get the newsletter at an email address can get it through a link at krhcc.org. And go there, go to the current news page, and you'll be able to get the current news from Knife River. through these newsletters. We got some interesting and really complimentary within 2 weeks on our site. We have a stat program where we can go in and get an idea of number of people that have visited the site and what pages they're looking at. And happy to see that within about the first 10 days, we had almost 300 people that visited our site. They're mostly interested in the current news page and also the town of Knife River. We also asked for comments, emailed comments on our site to let so we knew how we were doing. And these have come back very positive. Some of the words, amazing, well done. I read each page, indeed a great start. Someone else said, very nice, a good start for all your efforts. Awesome, thanks for the update. Awesome, nicely done. And the best one, and I did not write this, this person said it so well, I have to read it online or read it over the station here. The website is fantastic, chock full of history, photos, current opportunities, local opportunities, and future visions for Knife River. It's hard to imagine that what else could be included in these comprehensive internet pages. Kudos to all involved in putting this data together and providing us with a thick slice of Knife River heritage history. Great. Okay, let's see. My next story here, and I'm going to have to kind of move along here. The depot windows were a challenge and met. Well, when we first assessed the restoration of the depot in the spring of 2019, it was agreed to restore what remained of the depot and as opposed to letting it fall down. That meant replicating the windows using remnants of windows as patterns. Well, Larry Ronning from Knife River and then now in Two Arbors area is a volunteer general contractor, shopped around for custom window builder, and got bids from $1,000 per window to more than $2,000. Well, we took the low bid of $1,000 for each window. We need 9. And so in less than a month, all 9 windows were sponsored by individuals with either a full or half sponsorship. Well, what a terrific vote of confidence for what the Knife River Heritage Center was doing. We waited patiently for the first window to be produced so we could approve it and authorize the remaining 8, but the window never arrived. Numerous calls to the low-bid contractor were not returned. When he did call, he apologized for his absence and explained his family had a serious medical emergency and requested to be released from his old bid, which we did out of compassion for his family's situation. Well, we were in an awkward position. We had the money raised at the low-bid price that no other contractor had even come close. Then Larry Ronning stepped in and said, I can build boats and I can build windows and offered to build all 9 at the low-bid price of $1,000 a window. Well, I'm not sure if Larry regretted this offer or not, but I will not ask him. But I did ask him for purpose of the story to tell me what was involved. Well, listen to this if you can make any sense of this. The material to build the windows was recycled cedar from decks from Knife River area homes, all recycled. The windows were 13 over 2. That's 15 different panes. There are well over 100 pieces in each window, and each has 4 mitered stops. That's 60 pieces just in that. Don't forget the transoms, which are the upper windows. There are 2, and more simple 2 over 2, a complicated mess. Well, all I understand from Larry's explanation's last sentence, a complicated mess. Anyway, thanks to Mona Linda, also a board member, and our chief financial officer for helping Larry with glazing and painting. Thanks to both. Also within the issue, then I did list, and I won't go into this now, the names of the 11 or the 9 people that sponsored windows. Interesting, they are both people with descendants of the original founders and of Knife River. They're folks like myself that have lived there for many years, and some are residents as well. A nice broad base of support for our center. North Shore Scenic Railroad, just to give you a quick brief of what's happening this year, they're going to have picnic trains in June. That's a Saturday of every June, picnic train, board the train and into Duluth, come up here, enjoy a picnic at lunch that's included, go down to our beach, enjoy the afternoon in Knife River. We're also going to have a picnic or a Christmas tree train, and that will be the Saturday following Thanksgiving. Board the train in Duluth, come to Knife River, where a field of Christmas trees, garland, and wreaths will be set up, all from Northern Connection Landscape Wreath and Country Gardens in Two Harbors. They'll supply all them trees you've selected, they'll be wrapped, put in a boxcar, and brought back to Duluth. And the lot will be open to folks, the general public, later in that day. So that's what the North Shore Scenic has. And I see I am out of time. I got through the newsletter. Hope you enjoyed it. Be listening again next month. Again, we're on the air here, second Friday of every month at 9 o'clock, and then repeated the following Saturday at 1 p.m. You have a wonderful day, and we'll be back next month.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and good captain well seasoned. Concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded for Cleveland. Then later that night when the ship's bell rang, could it be the north wind they'd been feeling? The wind and the wires made a tattletale sound, and the wave broke over the railing. And every man knew, as the captain did too, 'twas the witch of November come stealing. The dawn came late and the breakfast had to wait when the gales of November came slashing. When afternoon came, it was freezing rain in the face of a hurricane west wind. When supper time came, the old cook came on deck saying, "Fellas, it's too rough to feed you." 7 p.m. a main hatchway gave in. He said, "Fellas, it's been good to know ya." The captain wired in, he had water coming in, and the good ship and crew was in peril. Later that night when his lights went out of sight, came the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours? The searchers all say they'd have made Whitefish Bay if they'd put 15 more miles behind her. They might have split up or they might have capsized. They may have broke deep and took water. All that remains is the faces and the names of the wives and the sons and the daughters. Lake Huron rolls, Superior sings in the rooms of her ice water mansion. Old Michigan steams like a young man's dreams. The islands and bays are for sportsmen. And farther below Lake
takes in what Lake Erie can send her. The iron boats go as the mariners all know, with the gales of November remembered. In a musty old hall in Detroit they prayed, in the Maritime Sailors' Cathedral. The church bell chimed till it rang 29 times for each man on the Edmund Fitzgerald. And the legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. Superior, they said, never gives up her dead when the gales of November come early.